Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Rice Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my direct blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload a episode to it. Definitely been doing it once a week lately, a little bit later this week, but definitely once a week. I've been on my game, so definitely hit up the blog or go to iTunes and you can enter Warman Kickfighting Show into the iTunes search engine and my show pops right up. So, got a lot to talk about. Got a lot of results to talk about. Right now, kickboxing is booming, as I've said in the last couple weeks, and we've really had some good events. Don't worry, I was a little bit later this time because sometimes I like to leave UFC weekends alone. Sometimes posting the podcast Saturday day doesn't get me the results. iTunes, you know, stays the same, but sometimes just staying clear of that is usually better for me, you know, when I do the show. So that's the only reason why I didn't post yesterday. I am going to go ahead and get you guys all the kickboxing action, including the fights that went down on Saturday. And then, of course, I'll be back on Friday. So I'm going to keep staying on the week. So it's just going to be a six-day separation or a five-day separation for you this time as opposed to last week where it was a eight-day separation. But I'm still trying to keep it on the weekly schedule, as I said before, all the way through minimum March. But I've got enough content to keep rolling this thing through April. So thank you for all the people who have been listening to the podcast, and let's jump right into it. We will go ahead and go to the Glory event. Started off as Glory Chicago is a pretty decent event. One of the things I'll say just before I even get into how this Glory 38 went down in Chicago, it's shout out to the Romanian kickboxing fan base. They really traveled well. You know, clearly most of them were there for Kylan Morsano. Of course, he's got that, you know, long history of being a solid kickboxer. You know, never the most skilled guy, but definitely on aggression. He has got a lot of successes, and he's done all right. He's done all right in Super Combat and the Glory opportunity, or the K1 opportunities he had. Didn't win them, you know, all the time, but he definitely had a really good career, and he built a fan base over those times for bringing those KO shots. Benjamin Adebuyi, of course, one of the better fighters on the planet in the heavyweight division. It was really cool to see how many people came out and supported them. So we'll go ahead and get right into the card, and I'm going to work myself from the bottom up. Nicholas Larson gets a low kick decision over Lacus Palowecki, and Palowecki provided what I would call just considerate amount of professional resistance. I thought Larson was the better fighter from jump, got the combination kick game going. Palowecki is a guy who's on this card because Chicago's got that huge Polish community. They haven't been able to tap into it like the boxing market has when they've brought fighters over, but they definitely have a huge community of supporters in the Chicago area that they're trying to tap into and get out to the show. That's why him and Jacek, for example, were able to get on this card. Nicholas Larson was able to put on a good, clean kickboxing performance, good low kicks. I mean, he's got some losses here and there, but Nicholas Larson is a serviceable kickboxer, and he is healthy and ready to go. When Glory returns to his hometown, I believe when they go to Denmark, and two Glories down the road. I think it's Glory 40. It might be the next one, but he definitely got through this one injury-free, and he is ready to compete again. We move on to Daniel Morales getting his first Glory win as he gets a victory over Poel Jacek, as I mentioned before. Morales is a guy who, you can make the argument that he won all of his Glory fights. He's done good kickboxing in them all. He just hasn't been able to land what I call the sexy shots. He hasn't the ones that snap your head, the one that gets the crowd's attention. But here he was able to do whatever he wanted. The Jacek's opportunities here in the States, it's crazy because, you know, I would have thought that his opposition in Europe would have provided better kickboxing resistance and that the wins that he got over there would stand up better. But so far, he hasn't had the power since he's, you know, moved over to the States. And in both of his outings, it hasn't been his best work. Morales gets the win here. Morales just needs more fights, just like a lot of other, you know, American-based fighters. Whether he goes to Thailand, whether he goes to Europe, he just needs to compete more. It's the best for him. So good win here, and I was happy to see him. You know, he's a native of Chicago, so I'm glad that they, Chicago or the area. But he had a good, you know, fan support, and that was cool that he got this win. You know, I was surprised. I actually thought it was based on California originally, but I was glad that he got this win, and hopefully better things from him moving forward. But the biggest thing is, got to be offensively consistent. I picked Mirtha Grunhard to beat Tong Tai because I thought that he had the right kind of aggression to score the points that he needed to get up on the cards. Now, anybody who go Tong Tai, of course, knows his history, and they know that the Thais are savvy, and they play, you know, that slick game, and they score clean shots, and it's always, you know, there's a community of people who, whether they want to admit it or not, they are guilty of falling into this idea that the Thais always won. You just didn't respect his work. You know, so, you know, that's just sometimes when I watch some international bouts, a lot of times they'll say, hey, look at his defensive savvy, look at him scoring, look at the body kicks, look at the kicks to the arm, he's not getting his due. And it's kind of become the culture of kickboxing when Thais come over. And I understand it, and I have no problem with it. I just think it's part of the culture. Here, Tong Chai got hit a lot, and he had some moments where he was scoring some offense, but Mirtha Grunhard, as soon as he just threw with aggression, he was able to find big time shots, with his hands, scored it down early in a fight. They get into the third, and again, Tong Chai battling back all the time. But Grunhard, you know, and Grunhard would have moments where he would take breaks, you know, get the energy, and then let the hands go again. Tong Chai would find his moments of offense here and there. But I thought Grunhard was definitely in control, with the down in round one and then the work in round two. But round three, he let it go. And how, when you see someone double and triple up hooks like that, I believe it was the right hook, if I remember correctly. I think he was in, it could have been the left hook, but it was in the switch stance. And he just kept doubling and tripling it up. It's rare that you see that drop somebody. Normally, when you score, they still blend the hands together, and then they score that shot bigger in the other time around. But this case, completely different. They just kept letting that. He just kept letting that same side hook go. Put Tong Chai on the mat, and he was done. And I thought that Grunhard really made a statement that without the losses to Nicky Holtzgen, he really is a top five guy in the world. And again, he lost to Cedric Dombe too, but that was kind of more he. I think he lost the mental game. What I mean by lost the mental game was he went in there thinking, okay, let's play, who's going to get the KO, when the other person's like, let's play who's going to get the points and get the scorecards. So, good win for Cedric Dombe. He won the game mentally. He talked trash. He made it seem like he was going to bang it out. He did not. Grunhard went looking for the big KO shots. He played touch and go and got the win. Grunhard, different strategy. Could definitely be the champion. And Grunhard already mapped out that he thinks that Cedric Dombe is going to lose to Kangulo, and he's going to end up fighting Kangulo, and that's how he's going to win the title. Mirtha Grunhard, I believe, has won the most of these tournaments, you know, the like four-man tournaments. So for him to just win a super fight and just be in the picture just because he's a top-ranked guy, I think is a lot of fun. And I thought that a lot of people, you could make the argument that he beat Nicky Holtzgen in the fights that he's had with him. So it should be fun. Good stuff for Mirtha Grunhard. Good stuff for Mike Stim. Catalin Morisano and Maurice Greene decide to slug it out. They decide to go in there and throw that heat. Catalin Morisano finally lands big left hook, leaping left hook. It gets Greene in trouble and out of there early into the second round. Before that, I'm telling you, shout out to Maurice Greene. He, even just listening, like watching his mannerisms, the excitement that he had, he was ready to go from jump. Like, he was punching, you know, pounding his fist together. He was yelling. He was ready to compete. And sometimes people come in, you know, like the gentleman Jackson who fought in Glory, and he came in and didn't really offer a lot of professional resistance. He went down right away. Then, of course, he had that situation where he was out in Romania, and then he went down, and they kept trying to make him stand up, and he kept going down, and then they just kind of disqualified him on the spot because he didn't offer any resistance. He showed up to be an opponent. The moment he got hit a few times, he was out of there. This was completely different. Maurice Greene came in here ready to compete. He offered kicks here and there. Both guys were real sporadic with the kicks, like just something here and there. But mostly this was very tough man-ish. They were looking for the big shot to put each other away. And Greene landed a lot of those shots. Catalin Morisano finally, after the heaters were thrown, was able to find the left hook, put Greene down, and the crowd went nuts. As I said this before, Catalin Morisano had a huge Romanian fan base there. They were all over the place, football jerseys, Romanian flag, football jerseys, soccer. It was really cool to see. Really cool to see that audience and that support. So shout out to Catalin Morisano. Benjamin Adebuyi then follows him up with another win for the hometown crowd. Anderson Broderick Silva really brought an entertaining fight. Like, he got into what I would say, he was winning the kickboxing. He caught Adebuyi with a good shot early. Adebuyi had to fight his way back after being down. He scores a down of, Adebuyi, I don't think he went down. He was out kickboxed for two rounds. And then the last round, he was able to score the knockdown. And then that knockdown gave him an opportunity to get an extra in the extra round. It was weird because Anderson Broderick Silva, I'd wondered if he had lost him mentally because his corner looked like they were trying to stop the fight because of some sort of injury. And Silva says, no, he said, I'll go out there. You know, it's a really great job of camera work by the people who run Fight Pass. Right in the corner, you hear the corner saying, hey, are we going to stop it? They're getting ready to wave the towel. One guy, I believe, is holding the towel. He's sitting up on the ropes. Broderick's like, no, I'll go out there. Go out there. Goes out there, lets his hands go. He ends up getting dropped in the round. He loses the extra round, 10-8. But, man, shout out to Silva for, you know, he can kickbox. The only thing that's ever failed him consistently is his jaw. But he usually goes out there, and he does a good job of finding his low kicks, finding his offense. And Adebuyi actually got started a little bit slower. You know, got started slower today. Didn't get into his game right away. Got hit. And Silva was in control and doing things well. But Adebuyi, the savvier, better fighter, gets the win here. Now, of course, Glory's got to figure out their heavyweight picture. It seems like they're trying to do a... They're doing super fights more with their champion, Rico Verhaeven, as opposed to having him defend the title. Now, if there's one person who deserves that treatment, it is Rico Verhaeven. He has defended his title probably the most of all the guys who they've had in Glory since the new ownership came into play. Since he won the tournament in Chicago, where he beat Saki and Gita, I believe that he has defended his title a reasonably good amount of times. He's been consistent there. So if they're trying to put something together where he gets super fights and different looks, I understand. He's already fought Adebuyi for the title twice, you know, and they were training partners, and of course they'd work it out if they, you know, trained different places if they had to do this again. But man, in my opinion, he's done what he's supposed to do. Like he really has gone out there and competed and fought a lot of the best guys in the world. So if Adebuyi's got to fight somebody else in the time being, that works. Clearly, they're a little backlogged now because Ismael Lant was supposed to get a title, you know, title shot. Instead, they gave him a fight to get busy, and he ended up losing the fight, you know. So it's like, what do you do when you've got guys that are promised? And then, you know, the guy who beats him, does that guy get the opportunity, you know? So it's like, they've got to make some decisions here with Adebuyi, you know, with Wilderness, with their heavyweight division. They got to figure something out. But right now, their focus seems to be trying to get a fight together with Remy Bonjasky. They're trying to focus on getting the money to make super fights to build it, because last year's success has got them wanting more. The fight with Badahari has got them thinking, this is the fight to do. This is the thing to do. Let's give this a shot. Let's go after this. They're thinking differently now. So we'll see. I've got no problem with it because they're trying to make some money with Rico. But when you've got that many guys waiting, you got to do something. And I've heard some people mention interim titles. They do throw them out. Now is the time for interim title. Ismael Lant versus Benjamin Adebuyi for Ismael title or for interim title. Let's do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, if that's where we've got to go, that's where we got to go. But just leaving them doing nothing is not good for anybody. So we go into the four-man tournament. Zinedine Hemerlane gets a big-time KO over Brian Collette. Collette just maybe a little bit of nerves, you know, kind of moved into this fight late. I believe he was supposed to be in just a super fight. And then all of a sudden, either he's supposed to be in a super fight or he's contacted short notice. I believe just a super fight. But all of a sudden, he is on this card looking to compete. And gets moved to the tournament, and he came out and he tried to find his offense here and there, but he didn't throw enough of it at all to win a round. Zinedine Hemerlane just landing right hands at will, hook, low kick, clean single shots. Just he was the better, superior kickboxer from jump. And then in round two, he lands a probably KO of the year type devastating KO of the year until I mentioned another KO of the year candidate, devastating right hand that, you know, had Brian Collette spin the other way from the direction of the shot. Really odd fall. Big-time KO for Lane. He moves on to the tournament. Brian Collette, as I said before, it's not that he doesn't have talent. You know, he is an athletic guy. He's got the hook, low kick. His offense is strong with his hands, and his low kick is strong, and his head kick is strong. The thing with him, it just comes down to one thing and one thing only. Will this guy get the fights so that he can get the ring savvy to beat the best guys in the world? That's the only thing that's missing. He's just got to fight consistently. So maybe he gets infusion, maybe he gets something, but he's got to get more fights than just when glory calls. And I think that he's got to get rid of that. You know, I don't know if he has this at all. I think most of the American kickboxers are just looking for opportunities. But no kickboxer should have a pride about who they fight for and who they don't fight for. And what I mean by that is, in women's MMA, there are women who fight for Invicta. And sometimes if they, you know, if once they fight for Invicta once, even if they were brought in to lose or even if they lost, their mentality for fighting, you know, in the promotion, it means that they are just sold on, I'm not going to fight for anything other than this promotion, which means I will turn down 5 months of activity waiting for them to call me. Kickboxing can't be that. You can't be sitting around waiting for glory to call. They don't do enough shows. You've got to put yourself in whatever position to compete as much as you can, wherever you can. And then when glory calls, it builds on the work that you were doing before. But if you're of a place where you just aren't doing anything and you're just waiting for them to use you, you're just not going to move forward. It's just not happening. You're doing yourself a huge disservice. So definitely get on that Brian Klett's manager, people, coach, team. Look for some opportunities. Maybe he's got to go to Thailand. Whatever he's got to do, he's the athlete. He's a level of athlete. He could do this. As for Zinedine Hammerlane, you're one of the better fighters in the world in your division. You've got an entertaining style. You've been stopping people. You move on in the tournament. Ariel Machado defeats Daniel Younga very, very clean. He's up in the kickboxing, and then he scores a down in the third to cement his victory. I need to apologize for Ariel Machado. I had mentioned before that I thought Daniel Younga was going to win this fight, but I thought that Machado would have these moments where he kind of won a tough man style of letting his hands go and so on. That was a mistake on my part as a, you know, I guess you can call me a journalist or a podcaster. I was working the kickboxing event, and I was in the back with Ariel Machado, and he played with a lot of power punches on the pads. And then when I looked through the curtain and watched, the few times was when he would be throwing in flurries, and it made me think, okay, if he got a victory that day, I can't remember who he was fighting, not just off the top of my head, it's the guy who's fought in Super Combat. He's fought Adebuyi before. His name's just eluding me right now. But the Russian fighter. Our Belarus or wherever he's from. That night, I saw a couple of segments of the fight, and I thought Machado played more of a combination in the, you know, throw some big heat, move around, throw some big heat. Kind of like a shorter version of Kailan Morisano because of the brief moments that I saw him. So when I made my breakdown of who I thought was going to win, I went off of that. Then I rewatched the fight, and then I watched this fight, and I go, Machado's a mover. He's a mover. He's got good, clean kickboxing between hook, low kick, jab, low kick, single low kick. He plays that very, very well. I did him a disservice. I didn't have a good breakdown of him. He's a good kickboxer. I still thought that Daniel Younga, who's got the ability to beat everybody in this card, he's hittable. He's just determined to walk you down. He throws some good knees here and there. He's gotten away from them, but he's got all the talent in the world. He should be winning, but I keep forgetting that, man, this guy was its Showtime champion around 2010, and that is not close to right now. That is 7 years ago, you know what I'm saying? So 2010, 2011-ish, he was, you know, his prime. I don't still want to say it's behind him, but there are some – his jaw is definitely not as tough as it was when he was younger, and that day is going to run out. You know, Wendell Roche got into his 40s before he started because that used to be the big comparison. They used to compare Daniel Younga to Wendell Roche. I know I for sure did. Very, very similar. Took a lot of damage, kept moving forward. But Wendell Roche, he didn't have the KO pop, so he had to just keep beating you with combination and, you know, combination low kick work. That's how he got his job done. Whereas, the pressure and combination work, hitting you, staying there, that's how Roche got down. Younga could do that, but he could knock you out. So he really didn't break you down, you know, with pressure and then outpoint you. He broke you down with pressure and then got you out of there. So there are fights where he was clearly losing on the card. You know, what is it? Pergonis, I want to say, is the name of the Greek fighter. A fight to look up where Pergonis was up early, scoring all the offense, but then he just kept taking big shots from Daniel Younga, and then Younga got him out of there. Younga has always been the kind of guy to wear you down and get you later. But now I'm wondering if he could still be that guy. Does he need to completely change everything he's doing and just play a simple hook, low kick game, cross hook, low kick game? Simplify it, add some defense to it. You've got the tools. Just play it a little simpler. Ariel Machado, great job. Great job. You understand your identity. You do have KO pop. But more than anything, it's just your movement that's really going to give people trouble. He moves on to the final. I thought Hammerlane was doing fine, scoring at will. Machado was a little bit slower. He fought a little bit longer. And then all of a sudden, Machado was able to score was a knee to the body. This is how I saw it, that got it going. But Lane tried to hide it. And then in a flurry, he got hit again. And I think Lane just – a body shot came later, but it wasn't as significant as the knee. And then he took a left hook, and then the left hook, the way Lane took it, he, like, turned his back, and he kind of went towards the ropes. And then they kind of called a standing eight. And then after that, he kind of goes down to a knee, and he's holding his body. And it's like people had wondered what the shot was. But for me, the shot came way before the final series, if I'm going to go off of what happened. And then afterwards, he kept holding his body and saying, it's a body shot, something with the body. It's interesting. You know, of course, it doesn't make the best KO for highlight purposes because it looks like he just kind of turned around and took a knee. But it was a big win for Ariel Machado, who shows that he's got skill. And I'm excited to see what he's going to do in this division. He ain't ready for the champ. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but this definitely moves him forward, and I'm glad that he gets the opportunity. Antoine Pinto defeats Richard Abraham via split decision. Scorecards of 29-28, 28-29, 29-28. For me, it was not. I thought Richard Abraham was a bigger, stronger athlete, and if he just went out there and just threw in flurries of 4 and 5 shots, he would be able to get this win. I thought Pinto plays too much Muay Thai, kick and move. And Abraham, if he were to revisit this game plan, I think he'd been more aggressive with his hands. Because he fought the kind of fight that Pinto could win. He tried to beat Pinto at his own game. And that can get you into trouble. I just watched that in the UFC last night where a gentleman was winning the fight clear, couldn't lose in the boxing at all, decides to go to the grappling, to take down the only chance the other guy had. The other guy's able to turn the fight into the last round and get a victory. In that way, Richard Abraham could use his athleticism, his superior physical gifts, throw big shots, and get up on the card and get the win. He had a good crowd there and so on. He instead played more of a point tie game. I think I even heard that Abraham went to Thailand, so he, you know, pretty much prepared himself for a full rules tie, you know, fight for 3 rounds. And it was Pinto's game. It was the kind of fight that Pinto could win. You know, when Pinto's brother lost a couple months ago, the opposition just came out. Giga Chikadze just came out and just started whipping that body kick like he always does and throw his offense. He didn't let the fight get into a tie flow at all. I thought Abraham let the fight get into that flow, and I thought Pinto took advantage of it. Big-time kicks to the body, big-time movement, scoring here and there, a knee here and there, but mainly it was the kicks and the movement. He gets up on the scorecards. I thought there was no way he was going to get the cards in, you know, Abraham's hometown. It didn't go Abraham's way. He was respectful about it. He's always presented himself as a really good guy. I say seems like a good guy because I haven't met him. I'm just going off of what I've been told about him and the way he conducts himself. Abraham's good people. Good people, according to anybody that I've ever talked to, he did not complain or get upset about the decision. It was close, and it didn't go his way. So shout out to him for his professionalism, and he'll get another opportunity. While he's in Thailand, I hope he's fighting out there because he's got to build resume. A little bit tougher for him because he's got like a farm full of kids, you know what I'm saying? He's got a bigger family. Pinto, of course, this was a big win for him. Him and his brother both signed. They are, especially if you're going to go to Thailand, they are stars in Thailand. The girls love the Pintos, so that's why they are very, very popular. They're on TV shows. They're in commercial ads. Really, Thai Fight one of the more the better things that it did was it showed the skill of, well, I won't say necessarily the skill, but it showcased them in a way that people wanted to see them more. Like, they are definitely the kind of athletes that you're like, okay, this person is decently skilled in Muay Thai, and they're able to get stoppage wins over the right opposition, but they have an appeal to the natural audience of Thailand. And the girls love them, which means they got a teen market. They've got a market of people who just want to see them compete, and they can bring eyes in that aren't regularly in the sport, and that's big for the sport. So shout out to them. Shout out to the Pentos. Build on this. Let's see what happens moving forward. I'm glad they started with super fights. Don't go into a tournament right away. Go ahead and introduce yourself in a super fight, then move on from there. Artem Vakhadov is still your champion. Saul Cavallari actually came out okay. I thought that he had a little bit more volume. I thought he took round one, but Artem Vakhadov still scored a lot of offense, got the low kick game going. Not as consistent as last time, but he got into his boxing, and he found his rhythm very, very quick, even though he was down. And I look at Saul Cavallari after round one. Things went well for him, but I wondered how long he'd be able to sustain it, because he kind of holds himself kind of stiff, but he's still very good, you know, very, very good fighter. Round two, Vakhadov puts together a combination. It's cool because I show it to my fighters all the time, and, you know, you get confidence in it when you do it, but it's also confident to see it. And Artem Vakhadov throws this high kick, and the high kick scores, and then he follows it up with a 3-2 and just drops Cavallari, and the damage is done. Artem Vakhadov closes the show. He scores a clean 1-2 after a pullback, and then he just lets his Cavallari try to make it to the end of the round. The ref kind of saved Cavallari from actually taking one of those brutal SportsCenter-esque KOs in the corner. He took a left hook. He was trying to get out of the round, and I thought he was doing a good job. Moved around, bought himself some time. But in the end, once he got there, the big hand started to score, and Saul Cavallari, you know, was stopped in the corner. Artem Vakhadov is the truth. This is the second fight in a row that he got himself going in round one, but he figured you out to the point where he knew he could find his stoppage power, and that is huge. That is huge, people. It is huge for me, because I talked about the importance of it all the time. Stoppages matter to me in this game, especially when the stoppages come in clean, technical offense. And Artem Vakhadov is clean. He's got both stance downs. He can box. He's got good knees. He's got good kicks. He's got a good low kick game. He's got the adjustment, and he's a guy who comes from full rules Muay Thai. So Artem Vakhadov is the truth. This is a big time win for him. Clearly, it's looking like he's gonna go against Ariel Machado next. But man, gotta get Gokhan Saki back into the picture, because Gokhan Saki was the champion here. And he really is a talented dude who just, everything he does is awesome. Like, everything he does, it's just the way you want the sport to look. He's a very, very good fighter, very good competitor, the kind of person you want representing the best in the world. Shout out to him. Good stuff. The entire Glory card, I thought, was an entertaining card. I thought they put on a pretty good production, and I'm excited to see what they do moving forward. Taking us over to Japan. Japan, of course, we're going to talk about the K1 Lightweight Championship. Went down to 62.5 kilograms, and there was a reason why I showcased the K1 card. I finalized my card with that one. There's a reason why I decided to put that one at the end and say, hey, this is the one that I want to prioritize over the Glory event this particular time, because I think that right now their kickboxing brand is the highest. The audience is responding to the action the best. They've got the most prizes. They've got the, you know, stars that they're developing. They really do put on a great show. This is no disrespect to anybody out there, any organization out there. I hope that I'm not coming out that. I hope that doesn't mean that, Glory, I didn't put you down. You just heard me talk about you lovingly for a long period of time. I just thought that this particular weekend, Glory was on point, or K1 was on point. And there are other weekends where Glory or K1 just does like a Japanese tournament. It's just Japanese only. And that weekend, if Glory's on it and Glory will have a better product, I usually will profile that one on the end. But I knew this K1 card had it all, and it didn't disappoint. Everybody who watched this card just talked about how, man, it's just the best top to bottom, the best product right now. It's the best combat sports product top to bottom right now. If you love combat sports, you watch these guys compete, you're like, they're laying it on the line. And then I was talking to Duke Rufus about this a couple weeks ago. We both had fighters in the same card. We were fortunate enough to have success that night. And we were talking about K1. He goes, man, sometimes it's getting tough, man. You know, it's getting tough, man, where guys understand the scoring and they just start throwing heat. Now, that's not new. If you look at the heavier weights and Japan, there were some guys, you know, in the heyday of K1 who definitely weren't technical. They were just out there throwing those haymakers and trying to get their hand raised. So that's not new. But when you watch the K1 product and the weight classes that it showcases, you know as a fact that these guys are throwing, they're technical, but they're still throwing heat. So all the aggression is there and the volume is there. They're just doing it within the realms of technique. And that's what made this card so fun and so special. We'll go ahead and get into it. I'm going to start with the tournament. There's a couple of fights, you know. Katsuya Jinbo got a KO knockout punch, body punch victory over Takedo. And then we have Hirota Ishizuka got a decision, unanimous decision victory over Yuta Kuwata. Kuwata. And then I had Kensei Kondo and Atsuto Matsumoto fight to a draw. And that's kind of your undercard. I'll go ahead and get into the action of the four-man tournament. First of all, actually, let me mention one more super fight. I'll mention it right now because I mentioned the KO of the year. And I thought that the way that Hammer Lane scored that right hand, that was a KO of the year candidate. That lasted one fight, like one day. I get to watch this card later because remember, this card happened like 8 hours. It happened in the morning. Shout out to someone actually posted all of the fights online, and that's how I was able to watch it. I normally don't have breaks in this, but I want to go ahead and take the time to properly thank the person who posted those fights for me because that was a big deal for me. It was done by, he writes for Combat Press. His name, it's Best Frada, BestRafer7. He was the person that said, I'm going to upload the YouTube fights. He put them out there for me to watch. Shout out to him. I really, really appreciated that. Hold on a second. You guys might hear a sound in one moment. My apologies if you do. I just want to... One second. I want to give this person their due, so please... All right, cool. So it came up under Kickboxing Database, so subscribe to that if you want. But that's where the fight popped up for me. So I apologize if that noise was that bothersome to you. I wanted to go ahead and go to the link that was sent to me because it meant a lot to me that they took the time to send me the fight. So shout out to BestRafer7. Going to go ahead and go right back into talking about the action of those as I was before. The card was awesome. Rikia defeats Hiroshi Mizumachi, which is essentially a jumping switch kick. He jumps in the air, fires the first kick. I believe it's the right leg low, and then the left leg comes high, lands all neck, fight over with. Absolutely awesome. The thing that made it more awesome was the fact that it came in the flow of consistent offense. Rikio was already scoring big time, scoring with low kicks, scoring with body kicks, scoring with the boxing consistently. And then all of a sudden, he capped off a good performance with that big time KO. Rikia, I cannot wait to put my year in kickboxing highlight together because that one is definitely, as it stands, the KO of the year. That thing was awesome. Double kick KO gets Rikia a pretty much a gift-like moment. Very awesome stuff for Rikia. Want to see more from him down the road because clearly opposition wasn't super high. It was solid, but not super high. But big-time win there. Let's go ahead and roll into our tournament, and I'll start off with Ren Hiromada as he gets a victory over Bryce Delval. majority decision, just clean kickboxing. Ren proved to be better, didn't take a lot of damage in it. Bryce tried to have moments here and there, just Ren Hiromoto found consistent, clean offense earlier, was able to do a good job. Was the majority decision. I believe there was one draw in it. I didn't agree with that. I thought Hiromoto won clear, but Ren moved on. Very entertaining stuff. Want to see more of him down the road, and this was a good teaser. Now for the surprise part. Gunapar, Warsek Rec. I've been calling him Gunapar the whole time that I didn't work the last name. But Gunapar gets a victory over Corey Rube, unanimous decision after three. This fight was interesting to me because a lot of people wondered why it was put together. Now, they've used Gunapar on their cards before, and you knew when they were doing this tournament that they were probably going to use him. It probably made sense that, of course, you know, for TV purposes, they'd probably like a Japanese fighter to win. That's kind of what the idea of it is. Koyorobe, if he's a guy who's a champion already, champion in a different weight class, very, very talented guy, he is... was probably used in a situation because they thought he was the best bet for beating Gunapar. And if he's going to get beat, he needed to get beat early, and they wanted to have him fresh for the opportunity. So nobody realized that Bokal was going to be what he was when he got to K1. He just, you know, took out Masato in a very dominant way, and then he went on to have a dominant run. So the next time he fought Masato, they did it where Masato was fresh, super fresh. So I look at this, and I look at how that thinking was when they came together for this. And I was like, all right, I'm wondering if that was their thinking. Regardless, the fight was awesome. Koyorobe finding offense, Gunapar finding offense, both finding low kicks. Gunapar low kick, inside leg, outside leg. Southpaw versus southpaw. Both definitely scoring clean in the boxing. Koyorobe scoring good. But the fight was determined when Gunapar landed an awesome high kick that took Koyorobe down. But this just shows the heart of this dude. You know, he's one of my sons. He got up. And he fought back, and he tried to win the fight. Not just – it's the same thing when he lost to Hirotaka. He took that, you know, that big jumping knee after dominating the whole fight, and he didn't get up and just, you know, wait in the corner or you know, go behind his earmuffs. He fought back, and he got up, and he did a good job of battling back. I thought he had a really good third round. But Gunapar, that 10-8 is definitely hard to get off of get off the scorecard, especially because K1 loves their, you know, 10-10 round so much. For me, that was just really, really good stuff. I was really, really impressed by that and by that performance. And it's one of those things where it's like, okay, Gunapar, who's going to stop you? Because you've got the offense put together. That answer would be... An emphatic Ren when we get to the next round. But Gunapar, big time kickboxing performance, high kick, gets him the victory over Koyorobe, who was tough and was able to get up and get it to the scorecards. Wei Ru, the Chinese fighter, gets a victory over Daizo Sasaki. Sasaki is a decently talented dude, but he ain't got the gifts that Wei Ru got. Wei Ru is able to win with the boxing. He's able to win with just kicking. He can play both together. He's got a good kind of defensive savviness to him. He moves all the way just enough. He finds his moments. He is a talent. Very, very good, very clean victory here. He set the stage for what's a theme that I'm going to talk about a little bit later. The Chinese fighter really put on a show, and China is really doing a great job producing high-level kickboxers. And, you know, I was talking to and I'll get into it a little bit more down the road. I've got more results to talk about. But I was talking to Ryan Scalia. We do a boxing podcast together. And after we were done recording, he and I just started talking about kickboxing for a little bit. And then he mentioned that, man, you know, China really only focused on kickboxing for like the past, you know, the promotions that have emerged. That's been really about the past 5-6 years, you know. So in that short period of time, they've been able to produce some pretty good athletes. And they're right, you know, shout out to them. I'm excited to see what happens, you know, what comes from them down the road because they keep producing them. And Wei Ru was another one. He gets a big victory here. Gets Sasaki's scoring well. Round two, without taking a lot of damage, puts together an offensive series with his hands, gets a big-time KO, gets the knockout, moves on, and this is how tournaments work. If you're better than a guy, get him out of there. So Uehara was able to move into the next round by stopping Sasaki with the boxing. So we move on to Christian Specku, who gets a victory over Toshiki Taniyama. I thought Specku did a good job of consistent, clean kickboxing throughout. Just he had a good combo to low kick game. He had single low kicks. He had the boxing. He was hittable, but I thought that he showed me some good tools, better tools than I had seen from him before, seeing him fight in Romania. I was impressed by him. I thought that he was a good addition to this card, and I wanted to see more from him as we move into the next round of fights. I'll take a break for those round of fights to talk about Masaki Nori. It gets a victory over Eunice Smaili, S-M-A-I-L-I. Smaili, I believe it's pronounced. And Masaki Nori is one of the best fighters in the world. I thought Eunice came out and did some good things. You know, I thought he came out and let his hands go. He's got the athleticism, just the consistent work from Masaki Nori. He attacks the legs however you want. You know what I'm saying? Like, he comes in there, he'll give you low kicks. He'll give you knees to the leg, something I'm going to talk about in a fight later. He'll give you the heel to the leg. Like, he attacks that low leg. He ain't playing that, and he's got really good boxing. He flurries really well, digs to the body like no other. And then, of course, he's got the step knee game and so on. He just had more tools. But Eunice Smaili showed me something. He could be something down the road. He just didn't have the talent to beat Masaki Nori on this day. No shame in losing to one of the better fighters in the world. So when you see somebody lose to Masaki Nori, or if you see somebody lose to Ku, or you see somebody lose to, Sitachai, if they put on a performance that shows that they signs that they could be something down the road, credit due to them. And this kid, very young, I believe 18, 19 years old, because that's how K1 gets down. They like to have their athletes between 28 and, 18. He showed me something. So I'm excited to see him down the road. Just keep fighting, and your opportunity will come. We go back into the tournament where Ren Hiromoto just destroys Gunapar, gets into an offensive punch series. I believe he scores a down early. Gunapar pops back up. And then in another series, he just knocks him out cold. It's been about a week, and I've watched a lot of fights since then, so please forgive me. But a big-time KO with the hands from Ren Hiromoto. It was part of why the product is so great. So many people were pumped, and so many people were excited when this KO happened. The place just the excitement. Like, it's so important to have that in your fight event. And that's why, that's the one thing that Glory is developing more. Glory's kind of had it I'd really say in my memory, Glory had it for sure one time. They had it with Badr Hari, and they had it with Rico Vahiri. That was for sure. I felt the crowd response to everything. When this KO happened, I felt like that roof almost came off. They were into it. So all of a sudden, we've got what would be an upset as Ren Hiromoto is going to go out of this side of the bracket, the side of the bracket that I thought was going to go to Koyarabe. He's going to come out of that side of the bracket. He's going to be in your championship bout. He is going to meet Uehara as he gets a victory over Christian Specku. I thought that Specku had some moments. I thought he really did. Specku is not unskilled. But Uehara just had it together. I'm telling you, his slight, his subtle movement for defense, his boxing, man, the kid can really, really box. And his low kicks are well placed. Doesn't overdo it. Doesn't have to play long kickboxing, the low kick series. I just think that he's just got enough slickness, enough pop to really, really show the talent that he's got. And, I mean, it's just I'm very impressed with him. He then moves on into the tournament final, and he gets a victory, split decision victory over Ren Hiromoto. It was a close fight. It could have gone either way. I thought Uehara did enough. I liked his work. Ren Hiromoto really did himself a service, scored good, clean offense. When he got close, boxing was good. I think Uehara had a moment in the first round where I thought, okay, that series could probably secure you that round, and just moments here and there where I was like, okay, he's got enough of the offensive lead to get up on the scorecards, but you can make the argument for Ren Hiromoto again. I thought it was really, really good. So definitely, these fights are all on YouTube, so check them out. Reirui for Uehara, and then RENHIRAMOTO. Definitely check that out. And then, of course, you'll see the KO with Gunapar, GONNAPAR, Ren Hiromoto. Definitely check that one out. That's a lot of fun stuff. And the Gunapar, Koyarube, KOYAURABE. Definitely check that fight out. That fight's a lot of fun. And if you want to see the KO of the Year candidate that I mentioned before, Rikiya, RUKIYA, and he gets that K. You just put his name in, it'll come up right away, but he defeats Hiroshi, HIROSHI, Mizumachi, MIZUMACHI. So that is the fight that you want to check out for sure if you want to see the big time KO. I'll wrap the card up by talking about Taiga, as he defeats Hirotaka Urabe for the super featherweight title. As I mentioned before, Hirotaka is on a down streak, and I picked Taiga to win this fight because I thought that he was just more consistent with his, as inconsistent as he's been. I believe in his ability and the performances that I've seen with him towards the end of last year. I believe that his ability to find consistency would be better than Hirotaka Urabe's ability to stop the slide that he's on. And he was not able to stop the slide. And Taiga, who's got all the tools, combination low kick, he's got it all. He puts things together extremely well. I mean, fun to watch. Very, very entertaining athlete. But he just has these mental lapses where sometimes he'll do like Bogdan Stoica, where he spins rounds just trying to land flash. And he doesn't get consistent work. Here, he had the boxing, he had the low kicks, he closed the distance, he was able to take Urabe's shots, he was able to win in the exchanges. It was just his world from jump. Urabe looked like he's fighting from behind from the moment the fight started. I believe there was a down in the second, I can't remember exactly, but the biggest thing is it was clear. Taiga brought the fight and took the title from him. Good stuff, really, really fun card. Good stuff, K1, can't wait for your next offering. My big thing for them is I'm hoping they move to doing a card every month. Like, that would be fun for me. Right now, they're probably doing – they moved to a model that was better for them. They still work with Crush and so on. But they moved to a model where, like, okay, we're going to do 4 good shows a year. And then they moved it to 5 good shows a year. And I think last year they did, like, 7 good shows. So now, in my greediness, I want them to get to 12 good shows. I'll take it if they do 10 this year. But this was a good event. It's a really, really fun. I really enjoyed it. I'm excited for their next offering. K1, you delivered once again. We are going to go from the K1 card, and we're going to go ahead and start talking about some Kunlun. And the reason why we're going to talk about Kunlun, one reason in particular, it's because the return of Yota and Clay. The man's phenomenal. He is an exceptional, exceptional fighter who just, it just shows how talented he is for him to just come off the shelf. And it took him a while to find opponents. Shout out to Saifullah Hambakhadov. I believe I pronounced that right, Hambakhadov. Shout out to him for coming out, giving his best effort. But you just can't handle Yotsen Klai. Too mean with the power leg to the body, to the legs. Too mean with a step back. With the lead hand hook, one of the best of all time. The work that he does with that lead hand, he's hurt so many guys with it. He's got a mean straight left hook, but his step back right hook and his understanding of his lean is what makes him special. So shout out to Yotsen Klai Fairtex, going out there, putting in that work, gets Hambakhadov in trouble, gets Hambakhadov out of there. That's just what he does. He was better. They end up throwing in the towel. He gave it his best effort, but it's just, they're just two different leagues, two different animals, and the superior animal won. Other fights of note on the card, Andre Kuhlman wins the 4-man tournament. He defeats Ali Maki in the first round, and then Chinese fighter Kong Ling Fang defeats Daniel Corbino, TKO with strikes, and then I believe that was second round for that one, and then Andre Kuhlman gets a decision over Kong Ling Fang. Andre Kuhlman is a steady, solid kickboxer / Muay Thai fighter who, when it's said and done and he looks back on his career, he really had a great run. He fought a lot of the best fighters in the world. He win, lose, or draw, fought Liam Harrison, fought Bacow, you know, just he gave it his best effort, and he's got nothing to look down on when he walks away from this game. I was there when he beat Mustafa Mirani in Jamaica. He's a talented dude, a lot of fun to watch. I actually randomly saw him in Mexico City, of all places. They had someone on that card that's on his fight team, and I just looked at it, Andre Kubin, and I was like, unbelievable. What are you doing here? You're like, that's the first thought that I had. What are you doing in Mexico City? But it just shows how traveled this guy is. He's been everywhere. So shout out to Andre Kubin. Other fights of note, Danilo Zanellini, he gets a victory over Hu Zhu. I remember he had an opportunity to fight K1 back in the day. I think they used him like maybe once or twice. He then meets Mohamed Mozari, who gets a victory over Armin Hamborian. They then go to their 70-kilogram tournament final, where Mohamed Mozari gets a victory over Danilo Zanellini. Mozari is a solid fighter, but once this tournament's all said and done, he's not one of the notable names. He won't be one of the guys that you're talking about for a while. So, but he got a good victory here. Shout out to him and his team. And then, of course, I'll wrap the show up by talking about a couple of quick stoppages. Lin Quang Bang gets a stoppage over Italo Freitas, and Zhu Yi Jiang gets a victory in the first round over Stephen Banks. The American fighter's got kind of a gut, a bald guy, and he's decently athletic, does the splits, but he was not successful in this outing. But again, good stuff in China. That one is just, I believe that went down in Sanya, China. And Kunlun's doing it. They're putting on consistent shows, and they're giving us kickboxing action to talk about all the time. And that is really, really important to us. So I'm going to now go to America. I'm all over the place. I told you guys, we've been doing it. We've been doing it this past weekend. So we'll go ahead and talk about the fights for Lion Fight. I'll go ahead and talk about some of the main ones. Andra Aho gets a victory over Jerry Setzes. I did not like this stoppage. The cut was not in her eye. It was bleeding bad, but this is one of those things where maybe the ref was like, but it's a girl. I think that could come into play. Not fair at all. Not fair at all for me to make this critique. Maybe he was really doing it because he thought there was too much blood. But I have been in there in the corner myself with my fighter, Daniel Frey. She got cut in her fight. Was a deep cut. Wasn't running into her eye. Ran down the side of her face when it started to bleed. Deep cut. Guy looked at it. Decided to stop it. Ref stopped it. We wanted to compete. We'd won round one. We took the first time we got hit in the fight. The shot was a good shot, but it cut her. And we were definitely disappointed that the fight ended in that way. But there was nothing we could do about it. And then I talked to another coach down the road who said, man, what were you guys, he goes, oh, I saw that. What were you guys thinking in your corner? Because that's unfair. They only did that to her because she's a girl. I've seen guys go on much more with much worse cuts. And I've seen it myself. So I'm wondering if Jerry Sitzes, who had a phenomenal round, when they stopped it, she was scoring at will. She had backed Aho up. She was doing good work. Andra Aho needs to get respect because she did get up early in the fight and she did score the shot that caused the cut. But Jerry Setzes was right there. This is a girl who they gave this opportunity, I'm assuming, as a reward for taking the Iman Barlow fight on short notice. It didn't go her way. So definitely would have liked to see her get that opportunity to continue, but they made that decision. I mean, I'm not a ref, but I would have liked that to go on a little bit longer. We move on to Chip Mirza-Pollard as he gets a victory over Scott Noble. These are just guys trying to develop their name. I won't go into it too long. I just want to mention it because they need more fights, and this helped a lot. 50-43 on two, 50-44 on another. Just a couple downs scored. Very dominant one-sided victory for Pollard. Just like other Americans, you just got to compete more. Jafar Toshev got a victory over Yassan Badugo. Same thing, got a knockout with spinning back fist. Needs more fights. This helps. Norbert Fairtex. Speaking of Fairtex, I just talked about one Contender Asia opponent. Now I talk about the other one. Norbert Fairtex gets a victory over Amadeo Cristiano. He gets that victory 49-46 on two of the cards, 48-47. I had 48-47 on my card. I thought Fairtex played the game a little bit too long, but when he gets going, he is really one of the savvier, more entertaining fighters to watch. I just thought this time he didn't do it. You know, I thought this time he played with the single kick game, got it going. Cristiano did some good things, moved close. I wouldn't have been surprised if he had gotten like one of the scorecards, you know. But in the end, the slickness of Norpol gave up, like, he really does take round one off. So he definitely gave up round one. And then after that, he got into his game. Norpol could be meaner in the clinch, but he usually plays it just for safety. Almost never punches. In this one, he played all with kicks. And if you watch him in the Contender Asia, he just plays the whole thing with kicks most of the time. Kicks and knees. The punches are almost always slaps. He's just too savvy for the game. He's now older. But despite the fact that he's older, I think Yosenkly still, because Yosenkly played with the hands so much more, he offers more of a threat as he goes down the twilight of his career. Norpol still was able to play the game, still had a clean performance. They wanted to see a little bit more out of him, I'm sure, especially if they're bringing in a tie. And maybe he'll show more in the next offering, but he definitely gets the victory there. Joe Nottawatt goes out there and just runs over Kang Siam. It started with the low kick work that he got going good and early, and I could see that he was doing it. And you know how the Thais are. They got to, you know, hide it on their faces. He was Kang Siam was trying not to show that he was hurt. But I've seen this happen a couple times, but this is the other time that I saw it was not stopped during the actual action of it. It got stopped in the corner. I watched Bukau scored a lot of low kicks in the tournament when he was going against Masato. Masato was able to get the victory there. He landed a right hand as Bukau was kicking. They called it a down. Then Bukau switched up his game plan in round three and started to try to look for a KO after he had so much work, successful work with the low kicks. He tried to look for a KO with the hands, and that gave Masato the opportunity to get up. But Masato had taken the low kick damage. Andy Sauer watched that from the back when he watched the fight. And Masato went out there, really, really heavy in the low kicks. Round two, Masato was in trouble. And literally, they got into an exchange. And when they were in the exchange, Sauer started to knee the thigh where it was injured. And then visibly, you see Masato just like wince, break down, and go away. And the ref missed it, or else it would have been down in the spot. He got out of the round, and then they stopped it in the corner. So that was the first time I seen someone hurt with knees. The low kick work started it, but the knee work pretty much finished it off. Here, Nottawatt had him hurt, got into a clinch exchange, landed a big time knee to the thigh, loaded up and landed another one, and Kang Siam went down. A lot of people were saying that maybe broke his leg. I don't know if that necessarily happened. I didn't see any damage that I would say went towards a leg, but I just think that he had hit the leg, the work so much, he'd hid what was happening to him, that when it was over with, it was over with. So, and you see that a lot if you watch a lot of stadium fighting. You see the work of the low kicks kind of build up, and then when it's stopped, it is stopped. Like, this guy cannot go on anymore. So, Kang Siang, I can't even recall him having a lot of moments, you know, a score here and there because it's a fight, but Nottawatt really took it to him from jump. Really, really put in that mean low kick work, and then he got him out of there with the knees. It was awesome stuff. Connecticut, you know, the card was a little bit hurt because Antonina Shevchenko, her opponent, Furani, the young lady who fought and lost by low kicks to Tiffany Von Soest a while ago. She wasn't able to get her visa stuff a little bit tougher for her to get that paperwork in and her fight. I think it was something with her medicals. She wasn't able to get that done in time, so they didn't allow the fight to happen. So Anthony Shevchenko and her sister, they just went to Hawaii. So no shame in what they had to do there. But, man, I thought that that was – and Kang Siam wasn't like a bum. You know, I know that I remember he won on Max Muay Thai before in the past, but just Joe Nottawatt was another level. After Nottawatt won this fight, they asked him about Yosenkly, and he said that he was down to fight with whoever, just bring him in there, and he is down to fight whoever. Yosenkly is going to knock him out. Like, they're just two different levels of athlete. He's good, but he is not Yosenkly. So I hope they put that fight together because I want to see it, and I think it'll be a lot of fun. But, man, good stuff, really, really entertaining. I was really pleased with how this card went down. How that fight went down, because you always want that kind of emphatic moment on the end of a card. But, you know, Norpol was still a little bit too ho-hum for me to really enjoy his fight. But other than that, I enjoyed it. Man, I've been bringing you guys a lot of results. I'm going to keep those results going. I think I've been an hour in on just doing results. But I'm going to wrap the show up with two more. We had, I'll say three total. Crush had Crush 74 went down this past weekend, Crush with a K. And they had a tournament. I won't talk about all the fights. I'm going to talk about the winner. The tournament winner was Kato Ozawa, as he defeats Yoon Kui in the final. And here's the interesting thing, and I mentioned before with Ren and Riru and the K-1 final. Starting to get a lot of Chinese versus Japanese, and that is going to build towards a fun rivalry of nationalism. Now, again, I don't want to, in today's day of hatred and racism and so on, I don't want to speak into that, because that definitely is part of the sport, and it's definitely coming out a lot in our world. So it's reflecting a little bit in our sport, just not in the terms of cheering for people, not necessarily in terms of this person hates that person, but definitely it's starting to show up rivalry-wise, and it's starting to come up in clean rivalry. You know, it's been done in a very clean, fun way. The thing that we worry about, of course, is we don't want this to turn into, riots or decisions that don't go a certain way and that kind of deal, whatever. I want the rightful winner to win. So both of these fights, for example, took place in Japan, and Riru, a Chinese fighter, was able to get a victory over a Japanese fighter in Ren. And in this situation, Ozawa, a Japanese fighter, was able to get a close victory over Yoon Kui. I thought the moment in the first round really secured the fight for him, because all the cards, we had 29-29, and we had 230-29. So they had two rounds, both judges had two rounds of 10-10s, you know, so really trying to, two judges have two rounds of 10-10. One judge had one round of 10-10. So it shows that they're seeing it close, and they're seeing that the guys didn't really separate themselves. Ozawa, I thought, won the fight in the first round because he had a series where he put together some good offense that really had Yoon Kui in trouble. Outside of that, I thought Ozawa was scoring offense, but then he would play with some flash, and I wasn't the biggest fan of that. But I thought that he did a good job of just being consistent. I thought Yoon Kui had his moments here and there. I just thought that Ozawa was the rightful winner, because if you're going to call the rounds close, the round that separated itself the most was Ozawa early in round one. So good stuff there. Next fight I'm going to talk about, again, not going to talk about the whole card, just going to talk about a couple notables. Hiroki Nakajima, as he gets a left high kick for a down, and then he gets a jumping knee that follow-up punches to get a KO victory over Yoichi Yamazaki. So good stuff there. Hiroki Nakajima is a guy who's been doing it for a while. He's been on a lot of cards in Japan. I'm glad that he's competing and still getting these opportunities. And I love the work they do in these small arenas and how well they fill it and how well the fans get behind him. So shout out to him there. The most fun result on the card, clearly, without question, without argument, was the big-time KO of Koichi Nishikawa as he knocks out Minoru Philip Kimura. Kimura came out, scored a down right away with kind of a sweeping hook with his right hand, and more like cuffed Nishikawa, who got up, got back to his own work, was scoring. He scored body kick, step back, scored body kick again. I could see that it bothered Monaro a little bit. Monaro then slowed his steps down as he pursued, because he didn't want to run into anything, another one to kick. He wanted to have the arm in place in case it came up again. Nishikawa read that and then jumped 2-3. Philip Monaro decided to defend by extending his hands. He had nothing defending high, so the left hand came straight. It was just short. The right hook came around the outside. It scored big and knocked him out. He was looking up at the ceiling. Big time KO. Awesome stuff. It's just one of those whoa kind of moments. This month brought it to us. Brought us a lot of really fun KOs. I mentioned the Lane KO. I mentioned the double kick. It just was a fun weekend of fights. And I still got another KO to talk about. So that's the top of the order for that card. There were a couple other stoppages and victories. Don't want to get into them all. I just wanted to talk about that because that was like the meat of kind of what happened this past weekend as far as results go. So going to go ahead and move to, of all the places, I'm going to Brazil. Well, Glory of Heroes 7 went down. Glory of Heroes 7, first of all, they've been doing cards in China. So this is, I believe, their first outing, if I'm correct, in Brazil. Top of the card, we'll go ahead and talk about Kui Jing Liang. I've talked about this show several times. He gets a victory over Paulo Teixeira. Jing Liang is the truth. The kid is very, very talented. I hope they put him in a more tournament. They give him more opposition. Going on the road and proving it matters. Going on the road and proving matters. So him getting kickboxing victories in China, that's a big deal. Masaki Nori getting kickboxing victories in Japan, that's a big deal. But when he went to France and he beat Nate Slamani, that was huge because it showed that Masaki Nori could take his talents on the road and still win, and in that case, get a stoppage. Quin Jiang Liang, a guy, of course, we know, of course, thanks to the Zhu Long decision over Bacow last year. Most people just think that some places in China are the shadiest in the world. But Quin Jiang Liang decided to take his talents on the road. He gets a victory in Brazil. That's big time. That's big time, big for the sport. I was very, very happy that he was able to get this win, and it was important that this outing happened. But the fight that the kickboxing world wanted to talk about is Alex Pereira as he gets a KO victory over Israel Adesanya. Battle of two of the top five middleweights in the world. Adesanya was up, doing everything right. He scored clean kickboxing with his scores, single kick scores, hook, low kick, moving around. In round two, it was all Adesanya. He was all over Pereira. It's great because I'm listening to, I got a Facebook, shout out to Jay Johnson, who got this to me. I got a Facebook fight of it. The fight had popped up online. I forgot who posted it first. I apologize if I don't get you on here, if you're the person who posted it first. But they got that online, and it was from Facebook, and it's somebody, a fan, recorded in the corner. And to hear them scream and the excitement of the crowd, it was just awesome to feel the fight from that person's perspective because they were Alex fans. So they're like cheering for Alex, and they just, when he was down, they're like cheering for him to get up and so on. And just really, if it wasn't for standing eight, Alex Pereira could have been gone in round one. He could have been out. But round two, he bounced back, gets to the stool, and then he did something that I always get on fighters about. If you're down and you know you're down, don't go out there and try to score clean kickboxing. You're already losing. Start throwing that heat. You know, you got to start throwing. You got to do yourself the favor of allowing yourself a chance to win in the cards. You can't just go out there and pretend like nothing's bad happened. You know what I'm saying? Or everything's good. Don't go out there like that. Go out there with the mentality of, I'm down, and your corner needs to be real with you, tell you what they're thinking. They shouldn't say if it's clearly you're up. They shouldn't say that. They should say there's a chance, or it's looking this way, or that was close, or it could be yours, or whatever it is, they need to give you a good critique. They shouldn't be like you 100% sure had something if they don't see it that way. This one, I'm pretty sure his corner told him, you were 100% down, you're going to lose if you don't get a KO. He went out there and he acted that way because the next thing is it's upon the athlete no matter what. And you should know if you're in there. If you're getting hit, you should know. And in this situation, Alex Pereira knew he was down because he was not just getting hit. He was getting beat up. So he came out there with a sense of urgency. He started to score some offense. Adesanya was starting to look to score here and there on the back foot. Pereira was just all over him, just coming. And next thing you know, he throws what I believe is a 3-2. I can't remember exactly. Scores clean. Adesanya is out. He goes down. Alex Pereira kind of like, you know, because of all the trash talk, he kind of like does like a little run around him, and he puts his hands in his face or his head, like kind of talking trash down to him while he's already knocked out on the mat as he kind of runs around him. And I wasn't a fan of that, but still a big time KO, big time win. Adesanya will be fine. This is kickboxing, okay? Don't go thinking this is the end of the world. I think sometimes people feel the desire to defend a win or a loss. if your guy you won loses, if it's close, you think it's the end of the world, so you start arguing for him. If he wins, you talk about his, how great he is over other people, if you know, and how he's the future, especially in Adesanya's. I think there's a rush in the kickboxing community for Adesanya to be represented as the best person in the weight class. It's fine that he had a loss here and there. It's fine that he lost close. He's still one of the best fighters in the world. As long as he keeps competing, his moment will come, his day will come. I feel like kickboxers are done a disservice by not having a K-1 or World Grand Prix style, because it means it's so long before you get to see them showcase where their talents are on the rest of the world. I think that if you have that one tournament every year, even if they can win two fights and lose one, you still see where they stack up with the rest. Whereas when things are sporadic and all over the place, you can't get a read on it as much. With that said, I heard they did 10,000 people for this event. I repeat, 10,000 people. And pretty much it was a China versus Brazil card. I go down the card, I see Zaltal versus Alex Oler. Alex Oler fought for it Showtime back in the day when they came to Brazil, if I remember correctly. Bruno Gazzani, as he goes against Ho Sing Ben. So pretty much that's what it is. Fernando Nanado defeats Wei Goji. This is a full card of, and one more fight I should know, Zoe Yi. That's a good time. That's a good victory over Marcus Vicinias. Vicinias also fought in its Showtime when they were down here. So that's what the card was. It's pretty much China versus Brazil. So for them to get 10,000 people to come out and support, it just was really, really great. It was good stuff. So we'll see moving forward what happens. And it was great for kickboxing to have this kind of event and get this kind of notoriety. But I do hope that somebody puts the opportunity for us to have a big, fun tournament so that people can see how good these guys are. Because if Poirier fought one guy and Adesanya fought one guy, and then, you know, they ended up fighting in another fight and you had an 8-man tournament, I think 8-man tournament shows the skill in one night the most, more so than a 4-man tournament. That's just how I feel personally. So that'll wrap the show up. It's a lot of fun, a lot of results. I went 110 minutes, so you guys know I saved up a lot. But don't worry, I'll still have content next week. I don't run out of stuff to talk about kickboxing. And, of course, I still have, you know, my Legends series that I can return to. So thank you for all the listeners. God bless, and have a good one. Peace.